Our lesson today in the life of Jacob covers Genesis chapter 31 to the end of Genesis chapter 35. In our previous studies on the life of Jacob, we divided his life into various periods, and let us just refresh our memory before we commence today's lesson. The first period was one where we saw Jacob's departure and God's grace, and this occupied the 28th chapter of the book of Genesis. The second period, which covers chapter 29 to chapter 30, is concerned with Jacob's discipline and God's government. And today, as we turn our attention to chapter 31 to 35, we are dealing with Jacob's directing and God's guidance. In a later lesson, we will turn our attention to Genesis chapter 46, and there we will learn lessons about Jacob's dependence and God's glory, and that will take us to chapter 50 of the book of Genesis. So let us summarize that once again. Chapter 28, Jacob's departure and God's grace. Chapter 29 to 30, Jacob's discipline and God's government. Chapter 31 to 35, Jacob's directing and God's guidance. Chapter 46 to chapter 50, Jacob's dependence and God's glory. So, we are dealing now with the section over which we have placed the heading, Jacob's directing and God's guidance. These are the chapters which see Jacob returning from Laban's country back to Hebron and to the presence of his father Isaac. Obviously, the education of Jacob in the school of God continues, and during this journey we will learn much that will be of profit for us as we too seek to serve God. Because Jacob is leaving Laban, there is no indication of the fact that his education is complete. Indeed, we will see he has still much to learn. For in life, we never stop learning, and we never leave the school of God. Now, let us turn our attention to Jacob's directing and God's guidance. We will see, first of all, that there was the commencement of the journey, which is recorded in Genesis chapter 31. And then, when we turn to Genesis chapter 32, we will see that there was conflict on the journey. So, first of all, we have the commencement of the journey, and then we have the conflict on the journey. When we turn our attention over to chapter 33, from verse 16, we learn about catastrophe on the journey, and we will see that there are sad lessons to be learned from the catastrophe that overtook them on the journey. And then, when we turn to chapter 35, there is the climax of the journey. So let us summarize that just for a moment again. Chapter 31, the commencement of the journey. Chapter 32, conflict on the journey. Chapter 33, verse 16 on, catastrophe on the journey. And finally, in chapter 35, the climax of the journey. Now, therefore, we commence our studies with the first cycle of truth, the commencement of the journey. There are a number of things that we should learn here. Jacob is about to make a momentous move. He is about to make a momentous decision. He is about to commence a momentous journey. And, faced with this decision, it is of interest to us to consider how Jacob addressed the question. We will see, first of all, in chapter 31, verses 1 to 3, there was confirmation. Let us read these verses. And he, that is Jacob, heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was her father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and, behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. Let us now examine these verses of confirmation. How does he know that it is time to go? Firstly, there were his own circumstances. Jacob is now able to support his own household. As we saw in the previous chapter, he has enjoyed a time of prosperity, and he is now a wealthy man. So, there is no reason why he cannot support his own household. Secondly, the attitude of Laban and his sons had changed towards him. We read that his sons said, Why, he has taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And the countenance of Laban was not toward Jacob as before. So, there was a changed attitude on the part of Laban and his family, and it may well be that Jacob anticipated that there would be further trouble from this quarter. So circumstances seemed to point to the fact that it was time to go. The wealth that Jacob now had enabled him to contemplate undertaking this journey. But Laban and his family, with their attitude towards him changed, were a potential source of trouble. And it would appear to be that it was wise now to move away from Laban. But that was not enough. It is not enough in life merely to look at circumstances and decide from them alone whether we should do this or whether we should do that. In verse 3, we learn that the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. So there was a voice from the Lord, a word from the Lord, and that confirmed to Jacob that it was now time to go. If we are faced with a momentous decision, if we are faced with a momentous journey to take, a journey in life that will change everything, let us make sure that we do not look at circumstances alone. Let us also wait on the voice of God. Now that will not come to us today as it did to Jacob, but it will come to us praying, meditating, casting yourself upon the Lord, seeking to know his will. He will reveal his will to those who seek it. And I trust that we will learn the value of waiting on God and refusing to act until we are persuaded in our own minds that God has spoken. Let us not be hasty. Let us not be emotive. Let us not merely look at circumstances, but let us wait until we are persuaded in our own mind that the Lord has told us to go. When that happens, you will know. When that happens, it will be plain. When that happens, it will be clear to see. So we have confirmation before the journey commenced. But I want to observe secondly, please, that we have not only confirmation, but we have consultation. When we are faced with a decision in life, it is good that we should not merely ascertain the mind of God and travel that pathway without taking into account those who must travel the pathway with us. A husband cannot determine how to live without consulting his wife and seeking her mind on the matter. Nor can a wife determine an independent course of action without consultation with her husband. If it be a course of action that involves others, out with her family, we must do open our heart to them. And so Jacob consults his wives. Let us read of this in Genesis chapter 31. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me. And ye know that with all my power I have served your father, and your father hath deceived me, and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. And he said thus, The speckled shall be thy wages. Then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, The ringstrake shall be thy hire. Then bear all the cattle ringstrake. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father, and given them to me. And it came to pass, at the time that the cattle conceived, that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ringstrake, speckled and grizzled. And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here am I. And he said, Lift up now thine eyes and see, all the rams which leaped upon the cattle are ringstrake, speckled and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, Is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours, and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. And Jacob rose up and sent his sons and his wives upon camels. And he carried away all his cattle, and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting which he had gotten in Paddan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river, and set his face toward Mount Gilead. So there is consultation. I want you to notice firstly the description which Jacob gives of his service. He tells us clearly that he has been a profitable servant to Laban, but do you note in the recounting of it, he completely omits his own scheming designs. I suppose we are all like that. When we look back, we see the hand of God, but we neglect to see our own doubts, our own schemes, our own designs, and our own efforts. Jacob was just like us. He looked back, and he chose to ignore what he would rather forget. We are like that. The second thing I want you to look at is the dream, or perhaps it was two dreams that Jacob had, the first mentioned in Genesis 31 verse 10, and the second in Genesis 31 verse 11. Some of you may consider it was one dream, but whether it be one or two, the lesson is equally the same. We saw previously that this tells us the true reason for his prosperity. It wasn't his scheming, but it was God's work that had made him prosperous. It was God's work that had made his flock of such a nature that they belonged to him and not to Laban. So you see, despite the fact that he leaves out his own scheming, he does introduce us to the fact that it was God who had given him prosperity. Never let us forget that no matter how we scheme, no matter how we work, no matter what way we seek to bend circumstances in our own favour, any prosperity that we have has come from the hand of God. Look at the decision of his wives. They decide to go with him. Is it not remarkable that they seem to have no obligation? no sense of obligation to remain behind. Immediately, Rachel and Leah answered and said, "Is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house?" You see, the poor way in which Laban had treated his daughters in the past is now bearing fruit. How he behaved towards them, and we considered that in previous lessons, is now bearing fruit, and they have no desire to stay with their father. I think that that is a very sad situation. Indeed, although the place lay with Jacob, there seems to be no feeling or of obligation on their part whatsoever. There is a lesson here for parents, is there not? To bring up our children in such a way that although when they marry, they do have the prime responsibility laid on them towards their husbands or their wives, but they still have a desire to keep links up with their parents. These two girls seem to have no such desire, and it behoves parents so to live that when family grow up, they will not want to sever their links with their parents. That's a sad set of circumstances. It can, of course, happen because there are rebellious children. But as parents, it is our responsibility to ensure that it does not happen because we have been poor parents. So, let us keep that in mind, that there was, on their part, no sense or feeling of obligation to remain behind. Now, let us look, please, at the departure. Jacob decides to go when Laban is away shearing his sheep. He's still the scheming Jacob. He can't get rid of it. There still is about him that which determines to decide things his own way. The Lord has said clearly to him, "Return unto the land of thy fathers, and I will be with thee." But Jacob has still a fear of Laban, and so he will not face Laban as he ought to have faced him, and declare now his intention to go. 20 years he had dwelt with Laban, and given 20 years good service. We read of that in Genesis 31, verse 38. "This 20 years have I been with thee." And it was time to go, but still Jacob cannot bring himself to face Laban. Do you see? Jacob's problem is our problem. We do not trust God for day-to-day living. Jacob has not yet reached that point. He does not trust God to keep his promise and undertake for him if he simply casts himself upon God. So, if Jacob is still scheming, Rachel is still unsure. Do you see what she does? She steals the images that were her father's. Now, the images were the teraphim, the idols. And Laban was obviously an idolater. Now, these idols were the idols before which Laban would come to obtain a response to a question, to obtain guidance and help. Laban would come before his idols. The question then is, why did Rachel steal them? The answer is that she stole them so that Laban would not find Jacob and his wives by receiving guidance from the teraphim, from the idols. Does this not strike you as showing how unsure she is? Does she still think that these idols have the power to guide? Is she still afraid of the power of the adversary? I think we can see here two things that often mark us in the pathway of life. One, our refusal to commit today to the hand of God. And two, we still have a fear of the adversary because we do not commit our way into God's hands. As we have seen so often, the story of Jacob, mirrors our own experience in so many ways. But note, please, that it was the God of Bethel who had appeared to Jacob. The God of Bethel. He is called the God of Bethel in chapter 31, verse 13. There we have the only use of this expression in the Bible. I am the God of Bethel. The God of first love. The God who is the personal God. The God who had appeared to Jacob. The God who delights in us being faithful. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Jacob was dealing with the God who delighted in those who fulfilled their vows. Let us keep that in mind, that in the journey of testimony, in the journey of life, we have dealings with a God who delights in those who keep their vows. I am the God of Bethel, where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land. God is linking the two things together. The man who vowed the vow, and the need now to move out of the land, and still to keep the vow. Let us, as we have already said, remember that that is our God, the God who delights in us keeping our vow. Now, we have thus seen that after confirmation, there comes consultation, and there is an agreement in the home of Jacob to move, even although they will do that in a way that perhaps is less than wise. Now let us move on to see that after confirmation and consultation, there comes confrontation, because Laban chases Jacob. We will not read the whole of this story, just a verse or two, verse 25 of Genesis 31. Then Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What hast thou done, that thou hast stolen away unawares to me, and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me? Didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs, with tabret and with harp?" Further on, Laban asks why the idols had been stolen, and he said, we will read at verse 33, "And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. Then went he out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent. Now, Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture and sat upon them, and Laban searched all the tent and found them not." Verse 36, "And Jacob was wroth and showed with Laban, and Jacob answered and said to Laban, 'What is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me?'" Confrontation. Why did it take place? Firstly, from the Lord's side, it took place because Jacob must learn that in his recovery in the things of God, no unresolved issues must be left behind. There must be not littering his pathway issues that could yet arise up and meet him. If we seek to serve God, we must ensure that we do not leave unresolved issues behind us. And from the Lord's point of view, that was why the confrontation would take place. In Laban's side, there was but hypocrisy. He's saying to Jacob, "Why didn't you tell me? Because I would have had a feast, and I would have bade you Godspeed, and I would have been pleased with your going." But we know, of course, that that was far from the truth. Laban would have sought to hold on to him. From Rachel's side, she must learn that deception leads to more deception. A lesson that we have already seen earlier in the life of Jacob. Rachel is learning this. She stole the idols, now she must cheat and lie when her father is searching for them. We quoted it before. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. From Jacob's side, he is honest with Laban. Notice, please, that he goes back over his past history with this man. We read in verse 38, "This 20 years have I been with thee, thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of beasts I brought not unto thee, I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from thine eyes. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle, and thou hast changed my wages 10 times. Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hadst sent me away now empty. God hath seen mine affliction, and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight." So Jacob looks back over the past, and he reminds Laban of four things. Firstly, the care he had exercised. "Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten." He reminded him of the care he exercised. He reminded him, secondly, of the conditions he endured. "Thus I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. Day and night he cared for the flock." There was the covenants he honored. "Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for my cattle." So, the care he exercised, the conditions he endured, the covenants he honored, and finally, the credit he received. I want you to notice, he did not receive credit from Laban, but he received credit from God. "Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hadst sent me away now empty." And Jacob is gladly acknowledging that his prosperity, the credit that he had received for his good workmanship, came not from Laban, but from God. It may be I'm speaking to someone who feels that he is working for those who do not appreciate him. Remember, God looks on, and it is God's credit that's important. God's opinion that's important, not the opinion of men. Here, Laban, as the employer of Jacob, was a rascal of a man who tried to keep his reward back from him. But God acted, and at the end of the day, Jacob received credit far greater, more valuable and more worthy than ever Laban could have bestowed upon him. If you're in a situation like that, please remember, God is the rewarder of such. But I want you to notice, please, even this is true in spiritual work. May well be that you are working for God, and those who are working with you have little sense of appreciation for what you do, nor do they value the work that you carry out. But remember, it is God's credit that's important, not the credit of men, not the credit of the few, but the credit of the one alone, whose reward is eternal. Thus we have these four features of his service: the care he exercised, the conditions he endured, the covenants he honored, and the credit he received. Now, we are still dealing with the commencement of this journey. We have seen that there was confirmation, there was consultation, there was confrontation, and lastly, there is conciliation. Let us read Genesis 31 from verse 43. "And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle. And all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto their children which they have borne? Now therefore come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone, and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, Gather stones. And they took stones, and made an heap, and they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Jagar Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. And Laban said, This heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galeed. And Mizpah, for he said, The Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. And Laban said to Jacob, Behold this heap, and behold this pillar, which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us. And Jacob sware by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered sacrifices upon the mount, and called his brethren to eat bread. And they did eat bread, and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning Laban rose up, and kissed his sons and his daughters, and blessed them. And Laban departed, and returned unto his place. So, here we have now conciliation. I want you to see three things about this agreement. Firstly, I want you to notice, please, it is a sensible agreement. The agreement is that Jacob and Laban will dwell in peace, and they will dwell separately. In seeking to serve God, this is a valuable lesson. Never let us provoke disputes or continue disputes that have no spiritual value and simply detain us on the pathway of obedience to the Master. Nothing was to be gained between a sense of war or dispute between Laban and Jacob. And so, this was a sensible agreement to dwell separately and to dwell at peace. Let us ensure that we do that in our testimony. Let us not have disputes with our brethren, but let us ensure that we dwell at peace with them. And let us not have disputes with the world, and let us ensure that the testimony is not affected by them. Jacob must go on. This matter with Laban must be left behind now. There are other pathways to travel. There is more of God to get to know. And Jacob, who had avoided the issue by leaving the camp of Laban while Laban was away, finds that God brought Laban to him so that the issue may be resolved. I dare say, Laban would have rather had a more profitable agreement. He would rather have retained Jacob's services, but this was not to be, and he faces facts. And so, conciliation is made. I want you to notice, please, that they both have a sense of the fact that the eye of God is upon them. Indeed, we read that the Lord watch between me and thee, when we are absent one from another. So, they both sensed that the eye of God was upon them, even when they were absent one from the other. I suppose they were thinking that if one of them was to seek to break the covenant, the other may not be aware of it, but God was aware of it. And thus God was looking on. And the man who vowed the vow at Bethel has entered into another agreement, and we already have seen that God is the God who delights in those who keep their vows. Now, I want you to see that there was not just a sensible agreement, and not just a sense of God's eye upon them, but there was a sense of obligation. So, in verse 54, there is a sacrificial feast. And Jacob offered sacrifices, called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. So, this covenant is confirmed before the Lord. Good if all our agreements could be so confirmed. Good if all our vows could be so confirmed. But Jacob and Laban have now come to an agreement before the Lord. There has been reconciliation. And so Jacob can continue in the school of God. The names given to this place are interesting. Galeed, which means the heap of witness, and Mizpah, which means a beacon or a watchtower. So, the stones and the heap, the pillar, was a place of witness. It was a beacon or a watchtower. It confirmed the agreement that had been made. So with this behind him, Jacob can continue on his journey, the journey of coming to know God. So that deals with the commencement of the journey. We will now turn our attention to Genesis chapter 32, where we deal with conflict on the journey. Now, there are three things that we want to see in Genesis chapter 32. Firstly, Jacob's strategy. Secondly, Jacob's supplication. And thirdly, Jacob's struggle. So let us read now the 32nd chapter of the book of Genesis. And Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's host." And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, "Thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau. Thy servant Jacob said thus, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now, and I have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and women servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find grace in thy sight." And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him." And Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks, and herds, and the camels, into two bands, and said, "If Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company, which is left, shall escape." And Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord which saidst unto me, Return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant, for with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me, and the mother with the children. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude." And he lodged there that same night, and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau his brother, 200 she-goats, and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 kine and 10 bulls, 20 she-asses and 10 foals. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, pass over before me, and put a space betwixt drove and drove. And he commanded the former, saying, When Esau my brother meeteth thee, and asketh thee, saying, Whose art thou? And whither goest thou? And whose are these before thee? Then thou shalt say, They be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, also he is behind us. And so commanded he the second and the third, and all that followed the drove, saying, On this manner shall ye speak unto Esau when ye find him. And say ye moreover, Behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I shall see his face. Peradventure he will accept of me. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. And he rose up that night, and took his two wives, and his two women servants, and his 11 sons, and passed over the ford Jabbok. And he took them, and sent them over the brook, and sent over that he had. And Jacob was left alone. And they wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh. And the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, Let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. And he said unto him, What is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. And Jacob asked him, and said, Tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, Wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name? And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, For I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. And as he passed over Penuel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel, eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh, unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew,